My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always good to have you.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start with some of the less pleasant news, and that's unfortunately where most of the news is focused lately. Let's start in Syria. This is obviously a worsening situation, especially with the reports in recent days of a massacre that involved an astonishingly large number of children. There had been not a lot of international impetus to get involved here. Now, as a result of this story, it seems that that's happening to some extent with Syrian diplomats being expelled from the country. More talks at the UN, but still certainly no consensus, it would seem, for intervention. What do you expect to happen here in the near future, if anything significant?
I've just returned from the White House, where questions about Syria dominated the briefing by Press Secretary Jay Carney. He now refers to Assad and his thugs, not just the Syrian government, and says he has put himself on the wrong side of history and will be known forever as one of the worst tyrants in his final days. I couldn't say it better than Jay Carney, quite frankly, and I know I don't quote him a lot. Yes, the tide is turning against the Syrian regime of President Assad. And indeed, Russia and China, who are the last two defenders on the international scene of the Assad regime, have turned on him, but not enough to permit a resolution going through allowing other countries and NATO to give the Libyan treatment to the Damascus government. I have to say that Hula, though, and the deaths that you describe were a turning point. People were uncertain about the Friends of Syria opposition and just what the next government would be like. There was a reluctance on intervention, particularly in other Arab states, and there was nothing of the unanimity that surrounded the coalition that in the end was key to bringing down Muammar Gaddafi. Now we're in the genesis of just that happening. It has not occurred yet, but I will say that when history is written and the last chapter is done, Hula will be recalled in Syria as what the Battle of Sarajevo was in the Balkan states 20 years ago.
John, of course, engaging potentially with Syria, whether it's militarily, diplomatically, the man behind the curtain there is Iran and its nuclear program and its tentacles into terrorism throughout the region. So that clearly complicates things a lot. How do you approach that aspect of it as an American diplomat is likely having to do right now?
Well, it is complicated, but quite honestly, Iran is not exactly a popular state anywhere in the world, and Ahmadinejad is not going to win any Nobel Peace Prizes soon. I think that the involvement of Iran is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it is given resources to the Assad regime that it may not have at this moment in the game. In addition, it is much more likely that Iranians are going to kill Syrians than Syrians will kill Syrians. Now, that said, just the involvement of Iran to do the dirty work of the tyrant in Damascus certainly does not make any case for staying out of there. As a matter of fact, it probably will just focus more world attention on how bad the regime in Iran is at this point and how bad the mullahs are. They've had their own record of dealing with dissidents that does not exactly merit any prizes, and now helping another strongman regime do the same thing is not going to help them either. I have a funny feeling the world is probably going to look hard at Iran when the Syrian book is finally closed.
Let's move on to another equally large headache, and that's the financial crisis, most especially in Europe. Greece, in a very precarious situation, can't form a government, could very well be kicked out of the Eurozone. Now Spain is hemorrhaging in a major way. So are we going to see another rallying of billions and billions of dollars to just stave this off for a little while, or are we actually going to see some of these countries crater?
Well, I would say the chances are more likely for the latter than the former, Greg. Let's take it one by one. In Greece, if they fail to accept the austerity package by the end of the coming month, that means that they will not get the second installment of the loan that comes from the International Monetary Fund, the EU, and the European Central Bank. And that means that within a matter of weeks, the government will collapse and have to pay its employees and transact business through scrip and IOUs. I know that some counties have done that in the United States, some cities even, an entire country doing it. I don't know about that. That means it will automatically be out of the euro and have to revive the drachma, which would be considerably less than the euro, and in the process, double the payments that Greece already owes on the money it's borrowed to stay afloat right now. This is a classic Gordian knot or a Hobson's choice, depending on how one looks at it. And in all likelihood, there'll be a government in there that wants to reject the austerity package after the elections June 17th. As for Spain, with 25% unemployment and eerily creeping toward a need for a kind of a settlement that Greece has had, as well as Ireland and Portugal, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, had a long conversation with the Spanish vice president today. She immediately went to the press to dispel rumors that the IMF had a fourth bailout package for a beleaguered European country. All told, the dark clouds are gathering over Europe, and they'll be felt in this country because so many Americans are invested in European markets.
John, last topic. We'll move to the results from Tuesday's primary in Texas. Mitt Romney clinched the Republican nomination. We'll talk about the Republican Senate race, which is still yet to be decided in a moment. But the biggest shock of the night was the completely unexpected defeat of former Democratic House Intelligence Committee Chairman Sylvester Reyes. What happened?
I am still speechless over that one, and not a lot makes me speechless, Greg. Beto O'Rourke, former El Paso City Councilman, head of a rock band, and someone who's been jailed for drunk driving twice, not only defeated veteran Congressman Reyes, but did so in a landslide. It was not even close, and in getting over half the vote, Mr. O'Rourke became the Democratic nominee. And what makes this even more eyebrow-raising is Mr. Reyes had the endorsement of Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, the two most popular Democrats in the country, arguably. As to why it happened, there was a lot of suggestion that Mr. Reyes's family profited from a $200 million government contract. He got a business. This is a year in which even the hint of corruption or enriching oneself at the public trough can hurt. And it obviously did in his case.
And very quickly on the Republican primary side, nobody got to the magic 50% plus one. Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst came in first. Former Solicitor General Ted Cruz, Tea Party favorite, came in second. A lot of people wondering if Cruz can pull all the supporters from the other candidates that didn't make the runoff together to pull the upset here in about 9 weeks. What do you think?
Well, the precedent on this in the history is very slim. Only twice in Texas history have Republicans had to choose their Senate nominee in a runoff. One does not know what the turnout will be in the summer. And remember, while Cruz is commonly called a Tea Party candidate, conservatives are not monolithically for him, and some like the more established Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst, among them Texas Governor Rick Perry and Mike Huckabee. And by the way, I couldn't be me without ending on this note. The very first runoff for the Republican nomination for senator from Texas was held in 1964 and was won by someone I saw today as he beamed like any proud father when his son's portrait was unveiled, George H.W. Bush.
That was a good moment at the White House today, a bipartisan moment, which are very few, as the Obamas hosted the Bushes and the unveiling of the portraits, which is certainly a tradition that dates back a long way at the White House. John, glad you were able to be there for that, and glad you're able to be with us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Greg. And as the heat settles down and I start humming On Wisconsin as I head to cover the recall election, I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.